Hello, dear listeners, and we have a podcast on the rule of law and corporate actors. And I'm happy to have today as a guest Rachele Cavara. And Rachele is a PhD student in management at the University of Ca' Foscari in Venice. And also, she's part of the Rebalance project. And actually, my first question, first of all, hello, Rachele. And
Hi, Elena.
Hi. And my first question to you, actually, what association comes to you when you hear the rule of law and corporate actors?
Okay, before starting, I just wanted to tell you that I'm delighted to be here and be part of this podcast series. So thank you for the invitation. The short answer to your question would be that in my research, the association between the rule of law and corporate actors manifests when corporations somehow violate the rule of law with their behavior. But please, let's work a little bit on this short answer with a longer one, right? So, I am an organizational researcher. So, I have to admit that I deal more with corporate actors than I deal with the rule of law. Indeed, I beg your pardon if my lexicon on this second topic is not always precise enough or my knowledge is limited. But anyway, a branch of organization studies is devoted to understanding the phenomenon of corporate wrongdoing. So, what is corporate wrongdoing? Corporate wrongdoing is defined as an organizational behavior that transgresses a line separating what is right from what is wrong under legal, ethical, or social terms, for example. And the problem is that it is a growing phenomenon in the business world. Despite all effort that has been put by public authorities in stamping it out. So some scholars even identify the erosion of wrongdoing as one of the grand challenges of our time. And there are cases of wrongdoing that are quite, let's say, I know it's a reductionist way to tell it, but let's say that are simple to understand, evaluate in terms of how they function and control, right? Think about managers' wrongful practices of stock options backdating. So this is mainly driven by the fact that managers, as organizational actors, behave as the homo economicus. Who makes decisions based on a rational cost-benefit analysis? So, studying how, for example, stock options are managed in an organization and the impact that this management of stock options may have on the malpractice of backdating is important and maybe enough to adjust the incentives schemes of organizations in order to avoid it. And of course, these cases of misconduct have a limited detrimental impact on outside the organization. But there are instead other cases of wrongdoing that are all the opposite. They present a bigger scale that may become a giant scale and bring about ruinous consequences to the society at large. And this, just think about, Elena, the renowned examples of the Enron scandal and the Volkswagen emissions scandal, right? These cases are so astronomical that identifying them, prosecuting them, and stopping them is never enough to stop their harmful consequences, not to mention to remedy them or set them off. So it is in such situation that thinking about the relationship between the rule of law and corporate actors may come into the picture as something useful and also very, very needed. Because on the one hand, we have the rule of law that I conceive I conceive as the existence basically of a rule-based order that constitutes the prerequisite for the protection of fundamental values and principles in a given political area. So this is the definition, let's say, or the conception of the rule of law that I came up with in my studies, where the protection of values include legality, legal certainty, respect for human rights, democracy, democratic institutions, and so on. The founding value of the European Union political system, for example. And on the other hand, We have the corporate actors that commit to complex wrongful behaviors for their profits, basically. So they commit to them regardless of the fact that they transgress a line separating right from wrong, and that thus disrespect the rule-based status quo of their field of action and the legal, institutional, political area of action. And so that's why associating the two concepts come quite straightforward to me at a certain point, because corporations implementing big-scale scandals can impact the rule of law, or at least we can say the strength of the rule of law in a given area, and erode the trust that citizens place in it. And this association, I must say, is currently, well, to the best of my knowledge, of course, is currently unexplored in management studies. And I myself have many questions, but little answers right now. So my point is just that this may be something worth exploring, sorry, we really want to start to hold companies accountable for their wrongful behavior as a whole, like 360 degrees.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for this answer. It's very, very relevant and very interesting for us because we also as lawyers we also have our own lenses and it's common for us to talk about the rule of law as a set of principles which actually address some requirements to the state, to public authorities, but now we also are in the process of rethinking this concept related to the private actors, just because they also have power and they also have a very strong impact on social life. So that's why it's not, just the problem of management studies or something like that. We are, as lawyers, also need to rethink some traditional concepts for us, but have a chance to look on them from the different perspective. Yeah, and in this regard, my additional question to you: what criteria would you recommend to apply for assessing the compliance of corporate actors' conduct with the rule of law requirements?
I would say this is a rather complex question,
Mm-hmm.
but in general, when we hear the word compliance in organizations, we think about something that is managed through the rollout of so-called compliance management systems. So they normally work under risk management in corporations, and once implemented, can basically assess diverse kinds of compliance. For example, in the automotive industry, this kind of compliance could go from environmental compliance to product compliance to HR and internal compliance. And consider that the attention to these kind of systems as effective tools to ensure right doing is so high that certain institutional environments discount the penalties for corporate wrongdoing if the corporation under trial has a compliance management system in place, because it's a kind of demonstration of good faith. Like, we did something wrong, but since we have a compliance management system in place, we did it under good faith anyway, despite of not even having a compliance management system in place. So there's much academic discussion, I must say, about the effectiveness of these systems in assuring right doing rather than the necessity to overcome them. But the state of the art about corporate compliance is nowadays still based on them. So a possible way to assess compliance with the rule of law in organizations could be, this is just an idea, of course, but could be to leverage these existing compliance management systems and roll out similar system for rule of law compliance. And this would be quite easy and not that costly for organizations too, because by leveraging existing systems, I mean that corporations could and actually could leverage existing internal knowledge, existing cultures of compliance, and also existing structures and infrastructures for compliance. This last point in particular is important when we think that big multinationals, such as automakers, right, necessarily massively deploy IT infrastructures to align their compliance between headquarters, different divisions and regions, for example. And developing such IT platforms is quite costly under financial and development terms. But if in this case, existing IT infrastructures for compliance can be leveraged, corporations may even want actually to scale the resource, right? And roll out a rule of law compliance management system, in this case, would be quicker than in the case of not having an infrastructure in place. Then to come to the possible criteria that you asked about to assess the rule of law compliance, I have the feeling that the sole, let's say, rollout of a management system would not be enough, while a focus, for example, on the improvements in the rule of law compliance as a result of the implementation of the compliance management system would provide a more concrete picture of how corporations implement rule of law compliance. And this point, differently from that on IT infrastructures, is something that is not always there in already existing compliance management system. And what I mean is that, yes, sometimes, just to be, let's say, a little bit more precise, what I mean is that sometimes compliance is assessed with a checklist or procedural mindset more than a substantial one. So corporations and their auditors for compliance ensure and control that everything that is supposed to be there in terms of compliance is actually there and sound. But in the case of the rule of law compliance, however, requesting organizations to stress the substance of compliance would be, in my view, of utmost importance because of the social cost and consequences of failing to comply. So an idea here would be to request organizations to display the milestones of improvements on the topic of rule of law compliance in corporate reports year after year.
It's very, very, very good points. It's interesting view as well, no, because again, it's very interesting, you know, to see how from the management perspective it could be considered, because we don't have the relevant experience how it could be managed on the corporate level. So yeah, it's very, very interesting. And you mentioned already the Volkswagen case. Could you tell us a little bit more why this example was mentioned by you, and what is the case about?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. And I've been working on the Volkswagen emissions scandal since during my PhD, since some years now. And I'm at a point right now in which the reflections about it brought me to connection with the rule of law concept. So It's becoming an interdisciplinary research right now that moved, of course, the first steps from the management sphere. So, it's a very well-known case of corporate wrongdoing. And actually, it's considered one of the most outrageous cases of wrongdoing in history. And Maybe it is just sometimes compared to Enron's accounting scandal or the BP Deepwater Horizon disaster in terms of the harm that these cases of wrongdoing all caused to society, human health, and the environment. So, but what is the scandal about then? So, as a quick recap, we all know that it broke in September 2015. When the EPA, that is the federal agency of the United States for Environmental Protection, issued a public notice of violation of the Clean Air Act to Volkswagen. So basically, the EPA alleged that the automaker installed illegal defeat devices on the diesel vehicles that it sold in the US from 2009 and to 2015. And as a result, of being equipped with defeat devices, those vehicles were able to first cheat on federal emissions tests, fake to be compliant to US emissions standards, then obtain the certificate of conformity to be marketed in the US, and in the end, pollute the environment by a factor that was up to 40 times the allowed limit. So, in terms of scale of the wrongdoing, it was discovered that globally, 11 million vehicles were sold between 2009 to 2015 that were polluting. Of those 11 million, 600,000 were sold in the US. 9 million in Europe, with a spike of 2.6 million just in Germany, and the rest around the world, but mainly in China and South America. So the problem is, let's say that the biggest concerns around excessive emissions were around nitrogen oxides, that are these pollutants that are very harmful towards human health. And there are many, many studies in the natural sciences that estimates the consequences on human life on nitrogen oxide excess emissions. So I'm very passionate about the topic, but I will just give you some numbers. So there's this study by Barrett and others of 2015 that estimates 59 early deaths per year in the US and 65 morbidity cases, always in the US, just as negative externalities of vehicles sold between 2009 and 2015. But then we have to consider the total life cycle of passenger cars as product, right? So the negative consumption externalities are even higher, and they are measured in 140 early deaths per year and 173 casualties per year. So actually, this was done before the buyback plans and the recall plans were implemented in the US. So the numbers are those of 2015. But just imagine that these numbers refer to 600,000 vehicles sold in the US, while in the EU they were 9 million. So there is, it's, yeah, I know. And there is a study by the MIT stating that the amount of life years lost in Europe as a consequence of the emission scandal is 29,000. So 29,000 life years lost after the Dieselgate. So let's come just after this picture. Let's come to the elements that it may have to do with the rule of law principles. So, the 2016 European legal system did not allow Volkswagen wrongdoing to be prosecuted centrally in Europe. So this meant that, differently from the multi-district litigation and the federal cases brought about against Volkswagen defendants in the US by the Environmental Protection Agency, the EU had no legal competence in prosecuting Volkswagen. So each member state had to prosecute it singularly according to its own legal provisions. And this in this case resulted in much fragmentation, overall scarce legal action, and a certain difficulty to see consumer rights enforced or enforced equally throughout the European Union or in a timely manner, okay, in terms of compensation, for example. And this may have to do with the European Union rule of law system in a two-way direction, I mean, because on one side, such legal uncertainty comes unexpected in an institutional environment with strong rule of law like Europe, and may actually open a window of opportunity to corporations to get away with their unethical behavior. And on the other, cases such as Volkswagen emissions scandal going unpunished under certain respect violate the principle of the European institutional environment protecting fundamental rights, because Volkswagen, with its behavior, violated human rights to life, to health, and also environmental rights, and actually did get away with it. So on one side, the rule of law setup permitted Volkswagen to get away in the European Union with its wrongdoing, and on the other, in a kind of reinforcing mechanism, Volkswagen wrongdoing eroded somehow the strength, or at least the perception among European constituents, of the strength and power of the rule of law principle in Europe. Another point here is that, and this is a little bit technical, but brief.
It's very, very, very interesting. Please.
Thank you. At the content of the rule-based order about the topic of defeat devices, stated at the time, we are 2016, right now 2017, that only the member state that had type approved a vehicle could impose penalties for a breach of its type approval procedure. So, what does this mean? Briefly, automakers need to undergo a lengthy type approval process, processes of the vehicles they want to sell in a certain market. So, do you, automaker, want to sell this car model in the US? You have to undergo the US type approval process, basically. In Europe, there exists the principle of mutual recognition, for which automakers can see the vehicle they wish to sell in the internal market type approved by a specific member state and be recognized as approved by all other member states. The problem was that the member states that had type approved Volkswagen's vehicles involved in the scandal could not prosecute Volkswagen for the reason that they did not set up appropriate sanctions for infringements of their type approval provisions in terms of disclosure or defeat devices. And even when such penalties were established, their effective, proportionate, and dissuasive character was at least questionable. And this last sentence, it's not mine, but it's taken from the report of the Committee of Inquiry that the European Parliament established in 2016 to investigate the role of the European institutional and legal system into permitting the scandal. So, of course, in such a case, in such a situation, we need to respect the fundamental principle of no law, no punishment. And Volkswagen clearly couldn't be punished if punishment provisions were not in place. But this means that the issue that we have with the rule of law is quite remarkable. Indeed, as a result of this, the European Commission launched formal infringement procedures against multiple member states on the grounds that they have failed to fulfill their obligations under EU vehicle type approval legislation and EU principle of effective application of European level law at national level. So, just to close, what this has this second point to do with the rule of law and corporate actors? I have the feeling that the scandal showed a little bit that the European Union has not full power in seeing its legislation transposed effectively at national level, and that and the enforcement power, and that has no enforcement power or surveillance power towards private actors, if not through member states. But this is sometimes not enough to prevent corporate wrongdoing, or alternatively, to be able to act against it. And this is a little of a breach of even some points of the Treaty on the European Union, according to which the European Union infrastructure should provide, should ensure effective legal protection in the fields covered by the European Union law, such as the human rights, right to life, to health, and this kind of topics. So this would be, these are just some points of reflections.
Yeah, but it's very, very concrete example. And actually, this concrete example shows, this important correlations between the state duty to protect and how it correlates to the rule of law principle and the corporate responsibility to respect human rights. And actually, that it's one system. It's not the different parts which are independent from each other, but it's one system. And also we have this different levels of law regulations. We have national level, we have European Union level, and we have global standards, and how it should work effectively to protect human rights and be based on the rule of law. So this very concrete example that actually shows all these perspectives, so it's very, very interesting. And probably my very last question to you, because we have a limit of time. Actually, from this perspective, could we say that businesses is interested in the rule of law? Because it seems that probably it's much easier for them to operate in the environmental, in the business environment where the rule of law is not so effective and strong.
I would say that the business world is definitely interested in the rule of law, because you see, Olena, in very general terms, the interest of the business world in the rule of law derives from the fact that operating in an environment with legal certainty is always beneficial under many points of view, no doubt. Think about high-level strategizing. In strong rule of law environments, corporations can strategize without bearing the cost or the risk of uncertainty and ambiguity about how to reach planned goals. Instead, where weak rule of law environments create institutional voids, corporations may even make the decision to avoid entering those environments. There's a bunch of literature on pieces on this. And the same also comes with competition. So strong rule of law context assure an equal treatment of competitors and fair competitive practices, while weak rule of law contexts may prompt competition played no more on rule-based mechanisms, but through, for example, I don't know, political connection, not to mention political corruption. And this, as a result, decreases competitiveness as a whole in a market. But apart,
please go.
Because apart from this general consideration, I also think that the business world is interested in the rule of law in order to use it to its benefit. So I'm sorry to provide a disenchanted view on the business interest in the rule of law on this, but it's also the fact that but the fact that corporations may use the rule of law to their benefit is maybe the strongest argument to stress the importance of talking about the rule of law and corporate actors, as you're doing with this podcast series. I know we are running out of time, but maybe just to say that as recipients of the rule of law, corporations are deep experts of the rule-based order of governing their field of action, because sometimes what they want to do is to meet the minimum requirements to be considered law-abiding. There is no moral judgment in my words, because these words are just perfectly in line with the vision of an efficient use of resources, right? Since resources are scarce, why should corporations deploy more resources to do more than what is actually requested of them? But also as corporations may be interested in the rule of law as creators of rule of law. So they may want to shape the legal environment of their field of action. And in order to do that, they have to know the organization and the functioning principles of the legal environment they want to shape. So corporate political activity, for example, is a growing strategy that companies use to reach their goals. And this is particularly true in strong rule of law environments such as Europe, the US. Yeah, this would be my concluding remark.
Yeah, and actually it's an excellent concluding remark. You know, the idea of the title business case for rule for the rule of law came to me. So it's no, it's actually, yeah, it's very, very relevant for us. And thank you very much. It was very valuable and interesting for us to hear these concrete examples and to know your view on this question. And so thank you very much. It was great pleasure to have you today.
Thank you, Elena. It was a pleasure to talk.